Hello and welcome to another episode of On My Last Eggs.
I went into Tesco and a woman that I'd never met before stood at the side of me and she said, well, that's what I mean, Paulette, because my doctor was trying to put me on antidepressants and I knew it wasn't depression. I knew it was to do with my periods and to do with my menopause. She was talking to me as if we were halfway through a conversation.
I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I am navigating the wild throes of perimenopause. And over the next few weeks, I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails.
I wasn't prepared for just how ready we all were to have that conversation.
Welcome to On My Last Eggs, BBC Radio's Sheffield broadcaster and all-round menopause mouthpiece, Paulette Edwards.
Hello, I don't know whether I suit that, but no, I'm having it. I'll take it all.
But own it, Paulette. And I really wanted to get you on the podcast because I feel like in the world of menopause, you are a bit of a trailblazer because you did this week-long Woman's Hour phone-in special between you and Jane Garvey and BBC Radio Sheffield back in 2018, which in menopause years feels like a long time ago, doesn't it? In the sense that people weren't talking about menopause in 2018 in comparison to how much they are now. What drove you to make that come to fruition?
I'm going to be honest with you, I am ever so lucky, Rachel. I've got lots of great friends, and so I'm lucky in that I have weekends away with my friends every once in a while, and all we were talking about was the menopause. All we were talking about with each other, we were asking each other questions, we were asking for information, no one knew anything about it. Some of us could talk to our mums, some couldn't, you know, because we'd lost our mums or our mums weren't up for the conversation. And I kept coming back to work and saying, we need to talk about the menopause. We need to do something. Of course, I didn't think it was going to be as big as it ended up being, but I just knew that we needed to say something. And even if we were saying that we knew nothing, we needed to do something. And I banged on about this, Rachel, for quite a while. And I kept saying to editors, we need to talk about this because a lot of our listeners will be in that phase of their life, going up to it, scared, concerned. I could tell by the conversations I had with my friends that they'd not, as I said, been able to talk to anyone else about it. And we were talking to each other because we knew each other, we loved each other, we cared about each other. We talked about children and everything that we found difficult. And this massive thing was happening to us that no one had any information about. So I approached a number of editors. It was a slow burner, really. It took me a few years to get to the position where Katrina, who's the editor now, said, all right, then. I think it was partly because she was starting to be more aware of it and we started the process.
In those early conversations you had with people, was there a discomfort? I find when I talk about menopause, you know, not on air, but off air in the workplace, I find there is, it's getting better, but I still find there's a level of discomfort about that topic.
There's always a deep breath going into it, you know, big, so what, you know, and there's always it's always sort of a gentle journey into the conversation. But I am blessed, I am lucky. And I think part of why the menopause has been quite straightforward in some respects for me is that I've been able to have those conversations. And it helps to have good friends that you can talk about anything to. But I just think for all of us, sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and do it. One of the things that I noticed in the week when we had the conversation was the amount of people who had they'd given up jobs, great careers, because they'd not been able to have that conversation with whether it was a colleague, whether it was a partner, you know, a member of the family, a friend, a boss. That kind of took us back to periods. So are we able to talk about periods? And I think if we struggle to talk about periods, we're going to struggle to talk about menopause. You know, if we think about the amount of times we've hidden tampons up our sleeves to go to the toilet, or we've been reluctant even to let our friends know we were having our periods, it's about those conversations being normal.
One of the callers I remember on the special you did on Women's Hour, she'd worked in the police force for years and years, and you know, quite a high level, and she said that when she started to have problems with her menopause, and it was a lot of it was anxiety based, and it really impacted her work. She said that she felt like she'd gone back 20 years in progression, because it felt like when you felt you couldn't talk about your periods, and it felt like all of that stuff came up about, I can't let anyone know this is happening to me, and that it's gender related, that it's female related, that it's, you know, reproduction related, because all of that says you're weak and you've got a disadvantage, and you know, it impacts what you can and can't bring to the table. And that really struck me. It's definitely a story, you know, I hear over and over again. It's like our armor goes up, so we're embarrassed to talk about it anyway. We don't really know what's happening, and then we think it might be a weakness that people might use against us or something.
We need to see, I think, our reproduction and the wonder of our bodies as our strength. Our menopause is a strength. It means that we've lived long enough. It means that we've had relationships. We've got to that age. Some of my friends didn't make menopause because they didn't live long enough. So it is a strength. If it's something that's a challenge to us, we need to ask for help, and we need to know that that help's going to be there, which is the next part of that, isn't it?
So tell me about your wonderful collaboration with Woman's Hour and Jane Garvey.
It was one of the most incredible things I've ever experienced, if I'm honest with you. My boss was actually quite clever because she said to Woman's Hour, well, you may as well jump on board. Why don't you, you know, this is something that obviously affects all women. You do Woman's Hour. I think she asked them a couple of times and eventually they said, well, why not? You know, and they kind of jumped on board with us. I was so nervous because I thought I'm going to be on national radio. It was all right on Radio Sheffield. Oh, they know me. They listen to me. They know what I'm like. And I was nervous. I was really, really nervous because I wasn't sure I was going to get it right, to be honest. But Jane felt like a friend. And I've met her once. There was this woman in radio's event and we met and we had something to eat and had a chat. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be doing it with anyone, I'd like to do it with Jane, because she was open and honest and felt like me and talked a bit posher than me, but talked like me. So once we got the technicals out of the way, we were two women sitting and talking about the same thing. It didn't matter where we were, who we were. We could have been sat in a wine bar, pub, or we could have been sitting in a cafe, or we could have been sitting in our bedrooms or in our houses. It didn't really matter, because what we had to say and the conversation we were having as the week progressed became more and more important. As it gathered momentum and more people got involved and people were talking to me in the queue at Tesco and people were emailing us, people were messaging us and Facebooking us, and I don't think I've ever had as many messages in my inbox in terms of people saying, what about this? Can we talk about this? This happens to me. What about this? You know, and I'm worried about this. And oh, can you please make sure that you... and on it went. And I don't think Jane or I realised, but before we started it, just how much the conversation was necessary, because it felt as if, I know it probably wasn't like this, but it felt as if everyone in the world was talking about it. It felt as if everyone was listening to us, and everyone, not just women of menopausal age, but younger women, older women, wanting to understand what was going on. And the conversation continued. And then we started talking about children and how children are treated around it. And it mushroomed into this massive thing. It was as if we'd found some kind of oasis in a desert, and people were drinking that water, Rachel. They were drinking that water.
Drinking from the menopause fountain.
Drinking from that menopause fountain and gulping from the menopause fountain as well. And, you know, just hungry for the information. And the more we talked, the more there was to talk about. It was a snowball that kept on going. So we did it in January. In October, people were still talking to me about it, and still people talk to me about it now. So it just felt as if it was the right thing at the right time. Maybe it was a little bit late, and that was what made it such a big thing, because people were desperate, I think, for it at that point. And I do think it's led to further conversations. And I do think that the more we talk about it, the more comfortable we feel talking about it, and long may that continue.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Did you get men calling in?
Yes, we did. We got quite a few men calling in, some without the knowledge of their partners as well, or wives, or, you know, they didn't really want to. They said, you know, I my wife is doing this and this is happening. I think from what you said, it could be the menopause, but I am not sure. Because the more we talked about it, the more we realised that, yes, it's primarily an issue for women to talk about, because we hadn't talked about it properly. But the knock-on effect was that everyone was affected by it. And it was a conversation for all of us, not just for women of menopausal age. So yeah.
Yeah, I always say this, and I mean, teenagers, you know, I think it's always underestimated what, you know, what a collision that is when you've got a menopausal mum with teenagers, you know, and that's a cocktail none of us want to order. And I think it really useful for, of course, one hopes that as the parent in that situation, you remember what it was like to be a teenager and you try and be empathetic to your teenagers, but the teenagers have no idea what their mums are going through, you know.
I can't remember who said this. She said that her daughter was starting her periods and she said, well, I'm finishing mine. I'm going through the menopause. And her daughter said, do your periods stop, Mum? So she didn't. I mean, why would you know? I don't think I ever thought about the menopause when I was a teenager. But it's just real. It's just understanding that is there. That is a part of your process of life as well. This is the beginning of that period and there's an end of that phase in your life as well. I was overwhelmed, you know, I was overwhelmed and very pleasantly surprised. And even though I know in life, I've spoken to previous editors and said, let's do something on menopause. But I actually think the time we did it was right. It was ripe. You know, just the right time. And because of my personal experience and Jane's as well. And Jane was so open. She was so candid about her experience. And, because neither of us knew what we were going to say when we opened the fader, but we both knew we were going to say, we were going to be as honest as we could be. That's what, you know, we kind of said, right, I will if you will kind of thing. And out it all came. And then everyone else was up for it as well. Yeah, it was... I think of all the time I've had broadcasting and I still am thrilled to be talking to people. It thrills me, Rachel. It really does. Of all the times I've had in broadcasting, that has been one of the times when I felt that what I've done has been particularly significant, ultra significant. Yeah, if that is a phrase. I think I've just thrown that in.
Right, I like it. And it's still available, I believe, on BBC Sound. So, you know, people can still hear it. So if you've not heard that very special week of radio, it's still available to listen to. Let's talk about your menopause, and we're going to go to your menopause via periods, which seems like a very obvious route. But you were/are an endometriosis sufferer.
Yes.
So I'm guessing that impacted your menopause journey with the treatment for that.
Yes. If I go back to periods, I started when I was 10, so that was really early. And my mum was terrified. She wouldn't let me go to school because she was worried that I might not be able to, you know, look after myself. So swimming days, I didn't go to school. PE days, I didn't go to school. Even from 10, very regular, but very long periods. So that was a problem. And I remember I wasn't able to go to school because I was in so much pain or was vomiting or whatever. So I had quite a bad time with my periods and didn't actually find out that I had endometriosis until... So I've got fluid on the brain. I had a shunt fitted and they scanned my body to see if the shunt was working and found out that I'd got cysts on my ovaries and worked out that they were due to endometriosis. I knew nothing about that. I was 32 at the time. I just met the fella that I thought I might want to have some children with, Rachel, finally. And we were thinking about having children. And that kind of took us down the road of, will I IVF, won't I? And because of the condition I had, I decided that it wasn't going to be a good idea for me to have IVF. When my body was starting to, I suppose, deal with all that, when I was starting to manage all of that, one of the things I did was gave me some treatment to sort of get my body to stop producing the endometriosis cells. That meant that I had 6 months without a period. And then my body took about a year to get back on, about 9 months, I think it was. And even when I got to the stage where, you know, sort of late 40s, early 50s, where I thought possibly I'll be going into the menopause, I wasn't. My friends' bodies were changing, but mine wasn't. My body just behaved completely differently to my friends who had had children and everything. I didn't really have that many symptoms. I feel a bit of a fake, really. I think I got off lightly compared to some of my friends who can't sleep. I've got no libido. I'm feeling ill, I'm feeling fed up, I'm feeling down, especially the last few months during lockdown. My friends who have been either perimenopausal or going through the menopause, have had a really difficult time. It's been tough for them. I think I got off lightly.
I don't think you can call it getting off lightly when you started your periods at 10. Bam.
Well, maybe.
And then
maybe
endometriosis for all this. Yeah. I don't think anyone with endometriosis can say they got off lightly. So when you, you know, finally realised you were fully in menopause and you hadn't had too many menopause symptoms, how much of a relief was that in the sense that those periods and that endometriosis and that cycle of trying to treat that and deal with that had gone?
The endometriosis hasn't really gone. You know, I think the endometriosis itself dies down, but the sort of the damage that was there still can cause problems. I wasn't pleased really because I hadn't had children. So for me, going through the menopause was like, that's it now. You will not, your body will not produce a child. Because my friends were saying, oh, you know, your auntie this from Jamaica, she had a baby when she was 82 or what. I know it weren't that old, but do you know what I mean? So my mum was always saying, oh, you may still. But when that happened and I realised that that door had closed, it was more that than anything else for me. It wasn't the fact that I felt like I was getting old or the fact that I didn't have to spend a fortune on, period products anymore. It was, I won't have a baby now. And that was really sad for me, Rachel.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I know many women who had long since known they weren't going to have, you know, they'd known a sort of 42, 43, 44. Well, I'm definitely not, you know, I haven't met a partner. You know, I've come to peace with that. You know, my sister's 43 and she's kind of come to peace with that now. But then you hear that 10 years later, when the door really is closed, suddenly that grief kind of creeps up on you, that finality of it.
You go through it again. Yeah. You do go through it again because... And you do have to, I don't know what your sister's been like, but you do have to come to terms with it. And I remember when the consultant, and he was great, said to me when we were making the decision about whether or not I would pursue IVF, you know, whether or not there would be problems about this fluid on the brain, benign intracranial hypertension, I think it's called, whether that would come back as a result of the treatment for IVF. I remember him saying, well, go home, come back with your partner, and let me know what decision you've made. Now, for me, based on what the neurologist has said, I thought, I don't know if I want to go there again. That was quite a tough time in my life. So I went into town. I remember buying some red underwear and a big brooch and thinking, right, this, my life may be without children, so I'm going to mark this. But it didn't mean that when I realised that I was going through the menopause or had gone through the menopause, I wasn't completely heartbroken all over again. Mm. Yeah.
And although it's not a light subject, I now have an image of you naked in red underwear with nowhere to pin the brooch, Paulette. I mean,
that is true. That's exactly what happened. Yes. I think I have to find a scarf from somewhere, Rachel, just for the full effect, because you wanted it all together. I should have taken a photo and then you would have seen Rachel.
Oh, it's in my head. I've got a photo.
You don't need a photo.
You didn't need to send me one. I've got it now. It's beautiful. There are many, many symptoms, 34 officially in menopause. Shall we do a few in a little kind of chart rundown type way? Here we go, Pompicus. Number 5 is memory lapses. These are usually only temporary, but memory lapses can occur during menopause. It'll be a miracle if I get through this chart rundown without forgetting what I'm doing. Number 4, I think, gum problems. Affecting up to 40% of menopausal women, gum problems are often accompanied by a metallic taste in the mouth, and of course, they could lead to your teeth falling out. Nice. This is a treat at number 3, tingling extremities. It's not overly common, but a tingling sensation can appear on any part of the body. But before you get excited about it being there, it's usually in the feet, hands, arms and legs, and not very nice. Number 2, joint pain. The menopause is a common time for women to develop musculoskeletal problems, i.e. you might start walking like a robot when you get up in the morning. Get used to it, girls. And at number one, we have decreased libido. Oh, the menopause really does just keep on giving, doesn't it? While a man's sex drive is largely controlled by testosterone, a woman's is primarily controlled by estrogen. And as we know, this can plummet drastically, reducing your sexual appetite while often increasing your cake and crisp appetite. Add to that chocolate, alcohol, anything else that's going to take your mind off the fact that you just don't fancy doing it anymore. And that, my friends, was your chart rundown of your menopause symptoms for this week. Have a good one, pop pickers. So what about after the menopause? Because, you know, I've been sort of digging around in this podcast, you know, trying to find all the angles, all the corners, all the edges of the menopause, you know, really delving into everybody's stories. And I'm a very positive person, and it's, you know, although I've heard some really difficult stories and people have had really difficult times, I naturally go to a positive place. So I've got this thing in me that post-menopausal, you know, I'm really excited for it. I don't know what it's going to bring. I don't know what, you know, I've had a couple of guests say that without that roller coaster of hormones that you get every month, you know, with a sort of flat line, even without the estrogen, you know, even without the thing, you know, the thing that we know is good for us, that flatness, that kind of clearness, is it a good place to be? So I'm interested to know from you, who you are now definitely on the other side of it. What's the view like? Is it clear and calm?
Rachel, there are flowers and there's sunshine. And how much you used to spend on, like I said, period products, that's in your pocket for a bottle of wine if you decide that you want to use it for that or whatever else. And as I said, I had really bad period pain. So I knew for at least a week, a month, that I was going to be out of action. And that was, you know, it's a quarter of your life, you know, in that kind of reproductive period. It's a quarter of your life where you're feeling awful under the weather, but you are still being expected to do. For me, it was a full-time job. For other people, you're raising children, you're raising teenagers, toddlers, you know, you've got your whole work life, you've got your normal life, you've got your relationship with your partner, but which we do have to invest in. A lot of things I couldn't sort of compute. And my sister used to catch me on a couple of times, you know, like, usually when I was having my period, usually in that week, she'd come to see me and my keys would be on the outside of the door because I'd literally opened the door, gone in, gone straight to bed, and left my keys on the outside of the house. And I don't know whether I would have been confident enough to suggest doing anything on the menopause while I was like that. I don't know whether I would have had the clarity to suggest that and commit to that. And it does depend.
So now you are in this beautiful meadow with the flowers and the sunlight. And I'm guessing there's like a sort of babbling lake.
Yeah. Nice music.
Yeah. Lovely. What are you going to do with your clarity, Paulette, if you're not already doing it? What do you kind of see on your horizon that maybe you wouldn't have been able to see for the fog of periods and hormones and stuff before?
I do feel that whenever I'm asked, like you asked me to come and talk to you about this, to use my clarity to do that, to, you know, a young woman when we did the menopause week who was in her 20s at the time said, I don't feel scared about the menopause anymore, Paulette. No one should feel scared of the menopause. No woman should be putting up with any health conditions connected to her gynecological setup that is a challenge for her and stops her from being able to do what she wants to do. So if I can in any shape or form help anyone to feel more confident, you know, to have those conversations or to get the help they need, that's what I think I'd like to do with my clarity. Because for me, you know, I had 12 weeks a year at least where I may as well have just been sat under a tree naked eating grass, because
you give me some great images, Paulette. I have got so many Paulettes in my head. There's the red underwear wearing Paulette, there's the naked under a tree to grass Paulette. It's amazing.
I've not given you the Paulette in a bath yet. Oh, I remember the worst bath I ever had, and I'm sorry to give you this image of Paulette, but I was in so much pain. I thought, I'll go in a bath, that'll soothe my body and just calm my body down a bit. And I was so ill, I was sick in the bath. It was awful, Rachel. It was awful. And It's how you feel. It's how it makes you all feel. You feel useless. You feel dirty. You feel, you know, this is a beautiful part of me that this is what makes me into a woman. This part of me made me feel on occasions the worst I've ever felt in my life. You know, I felt awful and dirty and worthless, and you know, my body wasn't doing what I wanted it to do, and I cried after I was sick, and then I had to get out and I had to clean the bath and shower myself and sit in the corner and still in pain after all of that. And I didn't realize I could go to a GP and I didn't know I needed help. I just thought that was what happened every month. People have periods and that's how. But I never had the conversation with anyone. I didn't even have the conversation with my GP. I think I went and said, oh, I have period pains, and he gave me some paracetamol. And that was the end of that.
Do you think, because it did feel in 2018 when you did that programme, it did feel like bold and you know, trailblazing to do that. Do you see the landscape and the conversation and the knowledge about menopause now, you know, 3 or so years on? Do you see it different? Do you see it is more open?
I hear more people talking about it, and I see more people talking about it. When the newsreaders, the female newsreaders on BBC Breakfast were having a conversation about menopause, I don't want to say I'm a trailblazer, because I don't know if that's true, and I'm flattered that you say that, but just more people have been using the word menopause and talking about menopause and being up for, you know, like 3 people have approached me to help them with books that came out of that week. So people are writing about it, and not feeling that it's something that needs to be hidden and only spoken about to your GP or your gynecologist, or something that you don't talk about at all, but you suffer. We shouldn't be putting up with it, should we really? And, you know, there are lots of discussions about women's health and what needs to change. And I think part of it is that we need to say we need help as well. And we need to feel that the climate is open to us. And if it's not, we make it open to us, because why should we have to suffer? I don't think it's okay for a 12-year-old girl to be in pain and have to have a week off school because she's in agony. And, you know, out of that, I mean, I don't know if the endometriosis stuff that we did on the BBC came out of that discussion, but there's so much about endometriosis and how it's affecting women and how women are having time off work. And I've got friends who've had to give up careers because of endometriosis. And again, it's women's health that, because we've not talked about it, because we've not felt able to talk about it, which I think is probably more crucially how we should say it. We've not felt able to talk about it. It means that things haven't been investigated and women have had to put up with, you know, various aspects of their health that they shouldn't have had to, really.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Paula Edwards, thank you so much for your candor and sharing your menopause journey, and I hope you continue to use your clarity to keep these conversations going.
It's been my pleasure, Rachel. Thanks for asking me.
That was Paulette Edwards. You can hear Paulette on BBC Radio Sheffield weekdays from 10 a.m, and her week-long Woman's Hour menopause special is still available on BBC Sounds. Next week's episode, we'll be talking to former head nurse Suzanne Banks, who is currently leading the Menopause Improvement Programme for NHS England.
The tears of some individuals of the impact and the experience they'd been through, both at home and in the workplace as a result of the menopause, was heart-wrenching, actually. And that just reinforced to me at that point, this is the right thing to do. And actually, it's not just this organisation that needs to do it. It needs to be across the whole NHS.
You can follow On My Last Legs with new episodes released every Monday from Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get yours. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great week.